Welcome. This is the Industry 4.0 Club's Fireside Chat. My name is Mike Unger, and I am one of the co-founders of Industry 4.0 Club. The club's purpose is to advance the deployment of Industry 4.0. We do that through live events and virtual events like the one we're going to have today. A little bit about myself. I spent 35 years with Michelin North America in a variety of continuous improvement, operations, finance, and HR roles. And I've recently, when I became a business coach and executive coach, helping business leaders improve their business results. I'm joined today by my co-host, Mike Yost. Mike, would you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mike. And thanks, Dave, for joining us here today. As Mike said, my name is Mike Yost. I'm one of the co-founders of the club, one of the co-hosts here with Mike of the Fireside Chat. I've been in industry for about 35 years in the last 30 or so, focused in the industrial automation, industrial software side of things. So really excited to be here today and learn what we can from Dave.
Thanks, Mike. So just a quick introduction about our guest today, Dave Finlay. Dave is the CEO and founder of Fuse Data. He's spent much of his life working with technology. He launched his first technology venture in the early 90s and has been working with startups ever since to help them build, manage, and scale their teams. Dave has 18 years of experience building new technologies from the ground up and taking them to the market. He's built functions in product, technology delivery, and solution engineering, and has had the opportunity to work with some of the most exceptional founders and technology leaders in Canada. Dave advocates for healthy company cultures, corporate social responsibility, and other good initiatives. So welcome, Dave. We're glad you could join us today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike and Mike.
Yeah, just to get us started, I know you've started a lot of different ventures. What motivated you to start Fuse Data? And maybe what is Fuse Data as well, just to help our listeners?
Yeah, so Fuse Data is a data and analytics consulting firm. We specialize in helping companies establish or modernize their data and analytics programs. So the reason we started Fuse Data was, I was seeing this big sort of disconnect in the market. I was seeing this disconnect growing between business teams, technology teams, especially data teams. And as a result of that disconnect, I was seeing a lot of frustration and failed data initiatives on both sides. So I started Fuse in order to do things a little bit differently and do what I can to help heal that disconnect.
So you've been at Fuse for a little bit of time. What have you seen so far? Have you in terms of working with clients, have you had any aha moments as you've just gotten started with this company?
I would say like the biggest thing I encounter is, companies all have this desire to do more with data. They all understand they need to be data driven, but it kind of gets lost in the, how do we go about doing that? There's this frequently cited statistic where, lots of industry analysts will say things like 75% of technology initiatives fail to deliver positive ROI. And that's a crazy statistic if you think about it. So I think the big thing, the big learning here is, companies are at a point where they realize, the old way of doing things, the old way of approaching technology initiatives needs to change because, something's broken and we can't just keep doing the same old thing.
So you mentioned data. So you talked about disconnects and your company's called Fuse. Yep. So I assume you're leveraging data and fusing those disconnects.
Yes.
How do you typically find it? Is there a typical way that companies react to you being there? Is everybody always happy to see you, or technology teams love you and then other people don't? Or how's it handled organizationally in your experience?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the consulting answer is it varies. It depends. Right. But I think when you go in, you're definitely there to help people. You're usually brought in because there's a challenge, and that challenge is felt on both sides of the aisle. You know, it's, you know, these are, you know, when we're going in and we're working with teams that are like technology teams that are established, you know, they are very capable, you know, people that are on top of things, but there's just something not working, right? And so they're usually very happy to have some assistance and someone that's on their side, speaks their language, and is able to help them bridge the gap. And that's, you know, the gap that usually exists between the technology team and the business team within the customers that we serve.
Appreciate that.
When you think about when you serve your customers, I guess you've been involved with us now for a couple of decades. Are you seeing things different today than you did when you started in this industry a couple of decades ago?
I think in terms of approach, I think it's starting to change. Like, I think we are getting much more aware of the need to be sort of problem focused instead of technology focused. So that is changing. You know, I think the biggest thing that's changed is sort of the business perspective on data and analytics. I think before it was like back office IT thing, like maybe like 10 years ago, right? It's back office IT thing. It's like, I needed some information for a quarterly financial report or sales report. I would just, you know, email the guy over there and he would write a query and he would pull it. And I think now, you know, executives are becoming, depending on the vertical, more data driven. They want to be more hands-on. They want to be closer. They want to understand what their leading KPIs are, what the trailing KPIs are. They're much more data-driven. They don't want to make decisions based on their gut anymore. So I think that's definitely an attitude that I've seen change over the last 5 to 10 years.
How about some of the technologies? Obviously, over 2 decades, there've been a lot of technology.
Yeah.
Any of them stand out as particularly helpful in what you're doing?
Yeah. So, I mean, technology has changed a lot. And, you know, one of the things I find in data is the technology potentially even changes faster than any other, you know, discipline of technology, maybe with exception for maybe cybersecurity. But data and analytics is like moving at a breakneck speed. You're seeing technologies come, go, you know, Gartner has that hype cycle. You know, at any point in time, you can look at that hype cycle for data and analytics and, you know, you'll see like 50 things on it. So, yeah, I mean, data, the core principles of data management haven't really changed since, you know, the 80s and 90s. The technology on top of it has, and some of it's good, some of it's bad. And ultimately, what I will say is, like, you know, let's not start there. Let's not start with the technology. Let's understand the problem we're trying to solve. And then once we fully understand that and we have some empathy for the people that we're trying to solve that problem for, then let's go back into our toolkit as, you know, technology professionals and find out, you know, what we need to solve the issue.
And do you think it also has to do with the fact that these technologies are much more accessible to people at a younger age? So they're coming in and just expecting, because I joked around with my son, who's now just out of college, that he was the AV kid in middle school. And back when I was in middle school, right, that wasn't the most coveted position amongst the cool kids.
Yes.
Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you could say on that topic. So, you know, I think that's, you know, definitely one of the things why we're seeing like executives becoming more and more data savvy, data driven, is because, you know, there are people being promoted up into these positions, you know, new CIOs, you know, new, you know, VPs of IT or COOs or what have you, and they're expecting more and more technology to be in place that helps them do their job. And yeah, even at the individual contributor level, there are people coming in and expecting, you know, if I'm in a sales profession, you know, I don't want a Rolodex. I want some, you know, technology that helps me understand, like, what are the right customers to target? Like, who's exhibiting buying signals? I want to be assisted in that capacity. And then the other thing you see with technology is, you know, the boom of SaaS technology that's happened, like from an enterprise perspective, is interesting too, because you used to have, you know, in the 90s, you would have IT own everything, right? You wanted to install a new piece of technology, you would go to your IT department and they would source it, or they would build it in a lot of cases. Like a lot of companies had big internal software development functions. But now with SaaS, it's like, pretty much any department in your organization can stand up an enterprise grade platform. And so you have this, you know, proliferation of technology throughout your enterprise, which is great because the business can just go stand up what they need and get the job done. But now it creates a data problem because you have all these systems all producing their own data sets, not necessarily all in sync. And then an executive comes in and says, you know, I want the 50,000 foot view across this, you know, this cross-functional area. How do you do that? Well, that's a challenge. So yeah, technology is really shaking things up in that respect.
That's an interesting perspective to share there. You mentioned earlier too, this issue with, you know, managers wanting to be more involved with KRIs and KPIs and understanding how their business is going. And so data certainly pulling on that. How would I measure, or a part of that, how do I measure how a company is doing in managing their data? So how would you assess that? Because I think that's an important element along the same lines.
Yeah. So there's probably a lot of different opinions on that. So, you know, you could look at, you know, how the analysts would do it. Like, you know, Gartner has a analytical maturity model and you can sort of plot, you know, a company against, you know, that framework. You know, there's like the DAMA framework, sort of like this DAMA wheel and data management framework. And you can sort of go through the wedges of that wheel and assess where people are in each aspect of data management. So there's a number of kind of approaches you could use. What I like to do, and I'll borrow from, you know, both of those things I've mentioned, but I really like to take sort of that, again, kind of my whole message is around people first, right? So right. I'll look at how people are doing their job. And that will help me understand how an organization is or where they're at in terms of analytical maturity. So if I go into an organization and I shadow, you know, a sales team or, you know, a maintenance team and I you know, see them pulling data from five different systems and I see them cleansing data because, you know, this system uses this abbreviation, this system uses that abbreviation. You know, I know, okay, you've got a master data management problem. You know, if they're cleaning up sales figures or whatever, I know you might have a data quality problem or application integration problem. And so if you kind of take that grassroots approach along with some of these other more established framework, you start to get a real understanding of where the organization's at and an understanding that's based on, you know, the empathy for, you know, the end user, right? The people that are on the floor doing the job, the ones that need the information day in and day out. I think if you have that, you have a much more rich sense of where companies are at in terms of their data and analytics maturity.
Yeah, it's a great comment. I was thinking about, as you're talking about that, you know, a role I had a couple decades ago in tire manufacturing, and on the line, yeah, we had the folks running the line had to put the same data into four different systems. Well, I'm sorry, take it back.
Yeah.
Some of the data was automatically taken out, but the commentary had to go into four different systems. And sure, they didn't talk to each other, and one was used for this, one was for that, and one was that. Nope. And so, you know, truth was hard to find. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, you think about that, and you think about that person's job or the people's job, and, you know, you multiply that. It's probably not, you know, the only time that's happening across a company as well, right? If it's happening in one area, chances are it's happening in other areas. So you have a, you know, you have a cost to doing that, and then you have, you know, problems around, you know, synchronizing the data, data quality and entry errors and all that kind of stuff. But like the biggest problem for me is, you know, you've got a person you're paying to do a job, and chances are that manual syncing of information and all that stuff is noise, right? Like that's not part of their core responsibility. And you have, you know, high, I will say it's like high value people doing sort of lower business value stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, the biggest ROI in data and analytics is really freeing people up to do their best work. If you take them out of the muck and you take them out of having to do all this stuff that they really shouldn't have to do in the first place, then they're going to perform at a higher level. And if your people are performing at a higher level, your company's going to achieve more. Right?
That's really excellent. I think the other challenge we ran into a lot, which is real interesting about this this discussion, was having the same definition of terms. Yeah. You know, because when you go to use it, you know, because usually a lot of times we would have a calculation of sorts, right, to define something we were wanting to measure with a couple of inputs. And so if you didn't have the same definition, obviously would tell you different things. And that was, yeah, that's always the big challenge, was a big challenge for us at times. Worked hard to do that, to make sure there was a common definition, but we didn't always get there, so.
Yeah, common definition within the team, but as well as like common definition, you know, cross-functionally, right? Yes, at an enterprise level.
Exactly.
You know, you'd be surprised even some of the most basic concepts, you know, it's tough to get the enterprise to align on something like, even like, what's an active customer? Well, different teams may define active customer differently. So, you know, you have to be able to sort of bridge those gaps and bring those people together to discuss, right?
Absolutely.
And do you find that you've mentioned people first a number of times, you talked about culture and such, in your role as a technology provider, do you find yourself playing that role of facilitator and, you know, helping companies along that understanding, or do you have a coach internally that you're usually coaching up to help manage that?
No, I mean, that's kind of woven through the DNA of our engagements. You know, it kind of comes from this personal belief that, you know, we are in technology to help people achieve some goal, right? Like without, you know, the people on the floor, without, you know, the people that are, you know, taking business action, you know, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing, right? We are an enabling, you know, force inside of an organization, and we need to have that sort of customer-centric mindset. So I try to bring that in, and I try to, you know, coach the data teams and the technology teams up to, you know, maintain that point of view in their work. And I just think that generates, you know, it generates, you know, better results at the end of the day. But even for the technology teams, like understanding that your work has an impact and seeing that your work has an impact is great. Like, you know, we get up and we go to work every day, and, you know, it's really rewarding to see the impact of what you've done and how you've helped somebody, you know, save a couple hours of their time or save some frustration, or, you know, made it so that they didn't have to work on the weekend to pull together a deck for their boss or something like that, right? It's super rewarding. So I try to bring that in when we do our work.
If I can just pause for a second, I failed to mention earlier, and I'd like to just highlight those of you that are with us on LinkedIn Live. If you'd like to have a question for Dave, please feel free to put it into the comment box, and we'll be glad to share it with Dave and get his feedback on something you may be interested in. That might be slightly different from what we're talking about. So Dave, you know, I'm imagining a listener, a leader in a company sitting there going like, oh my gosh, you know, the more I think about this, I got a ton of data. I'm probably not using to help drive my business. Where does somebody start? I mean, let's assume that they aren't very good at that. How do they get their handle on this and turn what is into this data into maybe a competitive advantage of information that they can use to drive their business results?
So that's the type of problem I really enjoy solving. And that's kind of the primary focus here, is helping companies sort of establish that first data program or that first data and analytics capability. So I'd always start off with strategy. And strategy is like one of those words that can scare people. It can sound like, you know, big, consulting firm coming in doing, you know, $500,000 strategic engagement. When I use the term strategy, it's much more of like a pragmatic strategy. It's a people-focused strategy, but really strategy to me is just, it's a series of bets that we agree to make together. It's a series of decisions in order to achieve some common goal. So it doesn't have to be huge, but I think it has to be there in order to put everyone on the same page. And it serves as our sort of our guiding light as we sort of iterate forward with the organization. So yeah, lots to say on this topic, but I'll leave that part of that.
Feel free to expand. I mean, if you have,
strategy is important.
Sorry, go ahead, Mike.
So when you say strategy there, you're talking like, okay, my goal, you know, my goal is to increase revenue by this much, you know, by this sort of product, that sort of product. The typical chapters in a strategic plan would be, you know, marketing and sales, and I've got a product manufacturing and inside manufacturing, there's plenty of things as well. Are you talking about then talking about the data needed to achieve that plan? Is that what you're alluding to? Or
exactly. So you'll have your company strategy, like your corporate strategy, and your data strategy should really hang off of that. It should enable you to achieve the company objectives, right? But again, when I go in and I, you know, that's an input for me, is I need to understand where the company's going and, you know, how they want to get there and that sort of thing. But I always like with data strategies, I like to say, like, let's start at the end, right? So, you know, again, sometimes you'll talk about, you know, building a data strategy, and it's like, where are we today? Where do we want to go? And how do we get there? Right? I'm not super concerned about where we are today on its own, right? I want to start by saying, like, where do we want to go? Like, what is the future state? You guys have got these goals. You've set out this roadmap for you guys as a company. And then go around every department and understand, like, okay, this is, you know, this goal is attached to you, or you help achieve this goal. You know, how does data play a part in that? What information do you need? What insights do you need in order to be able to make the decisions that help you get to that goal? Right. So if I, you know, I want to enter a new market, or we have to hit revenue, we have to hit revenue by entering this new market, you know, sales leader, you know, what do you need as you enter that market? How do you know if that market's viable? How do you know, like, how do you track progress as you go through that? How do you know if you're heading in the right direction against that company objective? And you start kind of working down, and you start understanding, like, what do the people need end state in order to get to that corporate objective, right? And you kind of go through the department, you iterate through the business units, and you do this, right? And then once you understand where everybody needs to go, then you use that as a lens to focus on, okay, well, what's there today and what's the gap, right? Because if you just start with, like, what do we have today? I've seen a lot of people fall into this trap where, you know, they start profiling data and systems, and they start doing all this inventory work, and they start really looking at stuff that's kind of like, not super relevant to getting to where you need to go. Mm-hmm. So let's define where we need to go. Like, we want to go to the moon. Like, you know where you want to go. Okay, now let's look at seeing what do we have available, and then what do we need to build in order to close that gap to get to where we need to go.
Right? Yeah, so it sounds like then you don't want a separate data plan. You want a plan that's, you know, I want to ask that question, like you said, what are my objectives, and then what data do I need to achieve it? Rather than a separate sort of, you know, data management plan, if you will.
No, because again, like, if you, like what I said earlier, you know, data teams are, you know, born out of technology functions, generally speaking. And, you know, our job is to support the business, right? So if we put together a data strategy that isn't in line with where the company wants to go, then our data strategy is not the right one.
So I'm curious, Dave, how often, or does the breakneck speeds with which the technologies are evolving that you mentioned earlier, does that lead people to the point of thinking that they, that this should be self-serve, that you should be able, you set the right data foundation, and then Mm-hmm. You're done, and you know, they should have, you know, people in house that should be able to do the kind of things that you're coming in to help them with, or yeah. Self-serve a future state that's never going to come.
So, I mean, the term self-serve, I think, just want to make sure I'm answering the question. So there's self-serve analytics, which is like business users get access to analytics. And I think the way you're phrasing it here is like, you know, the data teams or the technology function should eventually be able to run this data initiative program themselves. So if that's what we're talking about, I always tell my customers that, you know, we are here for a period of time. It could be, 12, 18, 24 months, whatever that period of time is, it is finite. And the idea here is that you transition over time to take on more and more of what we're doing, right? So from day one, I'll always insist that we do this as a blended team. So never will we go in and say, you know, we're going to do this over here and we'll give you progress updates, right? So even if it's only one person, I always encourage them, like, at least hire one person that can sit in my team and can learn from my team and can eventually be like, you know, the leader on your side at some point, right? And then over time, that blended team just changes in composition, right? So it changes from like maybe 75% of my team to 50 to 25, and then the customer's on their own. So I kind of think of it more like an accelerator program or an incubator program than anything. So I do want customers, and I do believe that they should be doing it themselves, because it is a strategic part of the business. And I don't think you should outsource that over the long term.
Excellent. Yeah. And that's, you answered what I was curious about, because we see a lot of times people get so hyped up, so excited about the technologies yeah. that you see presented looks yeah. real easy. And now we have chatbots and AI and all these yeah. sorts of things. And people think, man, this is easy. Right. So just wondering how that plays into the mindset of the people that you're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, it looks easy, and some of the stuff, it's easy to go an inch deep on. But I think when you talk about enterprise level applications of this stuff, it's not. And I think that takes time for technology teams to absorb and get good at, and that's okay. And it also takes time, I find there's a saturation point as well with the business in terms of like how much change they can absorb. So technology team could eventually get to a point where they're moving at a certain velocity, but the business is only able to accept so much change at one point in time. And that depends on the industry and just the industry's culture and how they absorb change. It could depend on how busy the function is. Like if you're trying to introduce data and analytics capability into a finance function that's going through like a reorg, that's not going to work, right? They can't absorb any more change, right? So you have to be aware of that sort of saturation point in the business as well when you're introducing new stuff.
You know, Mike mentioned the word AI, and I can imagine you might get a phone call, hey, and I want to use generative AI for my business, can you help me? You know, can you talk for a second about generative AI and what that's doing to,
sure.
to this whole conversation or this whole area of discussion today?
It's generating a lot of conversation. I find it is, so there's generative AI, and then we'll just call it non-generative AI for this conversation. So on the generative AI side of things, I find it's a little bit of a distraction at this point. I think at least I can speak from the data and analytics space, where there's a lot of data and analytics practitioners within companies, a lot of technology functions, you know, looking at this technology and then trying to fit it to a problem. And that's never worked in our industry, right? You never start with the technology and then go look for a problem somewhere to apply that. It's kind of like if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail kind of thing. So I've been trying to, it's very cool. But again, going back to, is it enterprise ready? Is it even suitable for data and analytics use cases? You know, time will tell. But again, it's regardless of whether it's Gen AI or it's something else that comes out in 12 more months, the truth holds. It's like, let's not take the technology and try to find a problem. Let's find the problem and then go back into our toolkit and see what's the best tool to solve that problem.
That's great. I was, there's so many, there are a lot of opportunities when you think about it. I guess it's just trying to, you know, in some ways, a generative AI takes individuals' own knowledge and, you know, creates data out of something that maybe wasn't data before. Are you seeing that that potential, and how would you apply, how you see that? Have you seen that applied effectively in your business at all?
Like I said, I haven't seen any. I've seen a lot of prototypes. You know, we've even prototyped some things, even just to be able to communicate some of the challenges and shortcomings to our customers. But I haven't seen any, like I would say, like enterprise level use cases where I could see being applied in a repeatable and trustable fashion from a Gen AI perspective.
Gotcha.
When we talk about more traditional applications of AI, I think, you know,
yeah, it's different.
Tons of great ones, right? And I think this audience as well would be aware of them, from like preventative maintenance to quality control to, you know, even like all sorts of classification types of models, right? Like those are all fantastic use cases that are rock solid, have real positive and clear ROI. You know, they're trustworthy. You can measure and monitor those models. So I think that's a lot more mature, and, you know, we just have to kind of give the Gen AI stuff a little bit more time to see if it gets to that point.
You mentioned, Dave, about trust, and obviously that's critical, and the trust in the data. How does that process work? You typically find, because I know I used to sell manufacturing intelligence solutions, and we used to walk in and we'd collect information, and we would present to a plant, and we would show them the numbers we calculated, and they would tell us our data's wrong because they'd been producing their own reports that had a higher, you know, number than we were showing. Yep. It was a big issue of trust. Maybe talk a bit about that from your perspective.
Yeah, I mean, trust is one of those things that when you lose it, it's really, really tough to get it back. Like if you put something out for a business group and, you know, the numbers are wrong, it's probably the last time, especially if it's an executive audience, it's like the last time they'll ever touch your work, right? But I mean, trust is, you know, comes from having good data quality. And, you know, in order to have good data quality, you have to be able to define what is good data quality. Like what does it mean to have, you know, what is the data quality around a value of an order, right? Like what is a bad value? You know, should an order ever be zero? Should it be negative? You know, should it ever exceed $1 million? Like there's all these things that, you know, data teams, we can't, you know, weigh in on, right? And that's where, you know, that people focused approach, you know, comes in. And, you know, one of the things we do when we're delivering data capabilities is we like to do it iteratively by business unit, right? So as we're building our data products and as we're building out the underlying, you know, data infrastructure to support, you know, the business product we're building, you know, we're working sort of shoulder to shoulder. We're kind of co-creating solutions with the business, right? It's not like the technology team goes off, does their thing, and comes back for approval. We're kind of co-creating a solution together with the business. And in doing that, we are working with them to define what data quality is, right? And as we define what data quality is, we're reviewing the results of, you know, what we've defined and the rules we've put in place. And sometimes it does. It generates comments like what you just said. Like I have a customer in the real estate space who has, you know, taken the work that we've done and compared it to like a quarterly report that they were running, you know, for the last, you know, number of years, and saying like, okay, like we found gaps in this process because, you know, it was just, it was built and it was just running and nobody really questioned it. But, mm-hmm. you know, after we applied some rigor and formally defined quality, you know, we're starting to find, you know, challenges. So I think by working with you know, the people, because, you know, companies don't trust data, people trust data. And I think by working shoulder to shoulder with business and understanding what good data quality means, that allows us to bake that into any of the data and analytics we build, so that when we release something, it's trustworthy. It's, you know, the business is able to adopt it and not have those like nervous moments where they're like, I don't know if this is correct. I don't know if I should make a decision based on this number. Right.
Right. I hear you.
That's, you know, it's interesting when we talk about that. One of the things that we used to do, and it's always was, never is a strong word, but we seldom trusted the data without observing. You know, if we could, I mean, some things are hard to observe, right, from the census perspective. But if we could go out and observe on our own a sample, and we do things, then we could say, okay, what we're seeing as our observation is the same as what the data is telling us. Now we can extrapolate and for the most part, trust the data. Is that something that you advocate
And so this goes back to, you know, when I was talking about sort of that organization's ability to absorb change, right? Like it's not something where you could just put like, you know, better training or self-serve, you know, certification on this new data product that you've built or what have you. Sometimes it just takes time. Like there's just, it just has to sit with the business for long enough that they start to become comfortable with it. I always picture it like they just absorb this new capability, and it just takes time and you have to be patient. It's not something you can force. And a lot of the times I advocate for running things in parallel. Right. So if we're producing, you know, this new, you know, automated, you know, view, automated reports, what have you, run it in parallel for a quarter or two quarters with your current process. You know, I've done it before where, you know, we had people doing reconciliations between old world capability and new world capability. And that went on for, you know, a number of months. And yeah, people just, you know, it's not necessarily always a hard cut over to the new world. You have to be able to ease people in. And I think that comes a lot from that, again, that sort of focusing on the people, understanding the problems they have, understanding where they're at and what they need and the time they need in order to get from point A to point B. Even if they want a solution to the problem, it may not necessarily be something they can absorb right away.
Right.
It takes time for change to take hold in an organization.
Super. Well, we've been talking for about 40 minutes now with Dave Finley, and it's been a great conversation around data and really how to leverage it appreciate Dave, you talking about to achieve great business results. As we kind of reach towards wrapping up here, Mike, you have a final question or final perspective you'd like to ask or share before we go to Dave?
Yeah, maybe I'll sort of give my closing thought and then pose it back as a question for Dave. You know, he talked a good bit about people first and focus on the problem, not the technology. And one of the things that Mike read in your bio that we didn't actually touch on was corporate social responsibility. Right. And you talked about strategy, and if people have social responsibility as a strategic driver, what role does data play in that? I can connect some dots myself, but from your perspective, it seems like a good driver, a good strategic lever for people to be looking to deliver on that would have to be, you know, fueled by the data.
Yeah, absolutely. More and more I'm seeing, you know, the customers, you know, being very explicit around their commitments to ESG initiatives, you know, being driven by leadership, being driven by the, you know, investors, being, you know, just driven by, you know, even their own internal teams. I think there's definitely this groundswell happening where You know, teams want their companies, and people are going to go and work for companies that have strong positions on these things, and not just positions that they state, but positions that they are, you know, proactively managing their way towards. So, and data and analytics falls, you know, right into that nicely, because you can't you can't manage what you can't measure. So, you know, if you have ESG goals, and they're bold goals, as many are, you need to be able to measure those, you know, month over month, quarter over quarter, year over year, or else, yeah, you're gonna fall short, and that's gonna be challenging to recover from.
Okay. I think it was really the other piece that I was thinking about as you talked about that too was, you know, when you say something as a leader. Of a company about your results, that your stakeholders need to trust that information, which means you have to trust what got you to make that statement, you know? And so there is there's a really interesting, I'll call it a chain of trust, you know, from the data to how it's synthesized and then how it's used. And we see examples. We have seen examples historically where companies fail because they don't create that trust and don't share that social responsibility for, I'll say, you know, the truth, if you will. So it's a real interesting topic, and it's interesting to think about the chain from, you know, this piece of information or this piece of data down all the way through to, you know, how it's synthesized and how it's used to share results and create credibility and trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So Mike, thanks for that question. That's really cool. Did Dave, you have a final thought you'd like to share with the audience before we wrap up?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we talked about it earlier, you know, getting started in sort of that data and analytics journey can be challenging, even if you have some capability internally, you know, advancing that capability even can be challenging. So, you know, it doesn't need to be kind of an all at once thing. It can be done iteratively. I think, again, the message around, you know, starting at the end, focusing on the people, becoming sort of intimately aware of the problems that your organization is having, how you can help solve those problems in order to sort of enable those people to do their best work and reach those company objectives that we're all trying to hit. So that's kind of the parting remarks. It's been great speaking with you guys today.
Yeah, thank you so much. So just to kind of to bring us home here, I wanted to thank Dave and Mike for this great conversation around data and how to leverage data for results. It's been a really great conversation. This has been the Industry 4.0 Club's Fireside Chat. If you like what you're heard on this broadcast, the Industry 4.0 Club hosts broadcasts like this a couple days a week. The topics we typically focus on are women in manufacturing, the future of manufacturing, which is usually a technical topic in the area of Industry 4.0, Fireside Chat, like today we've had this conversation with Dave, and People, Process, and Culture. The club also does some work with live events. Our next live event will be at IME West in Anaheim in February of 2024. So we look forward to seeing you there if you're able to make it. Again, the Industry 4.0 Club, this has been great. A conversation with Dave Finley and Mike Yost. Guys, thank you so much for your time.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike. Dave.